CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in China. First visit by a Secretary of State in 5 years. The headline in the London Times, Antony Blinken meets President Xi but fails to reopen China military channels. Relations between the two countries, reports the Times, are at the lowest ebb for decades. But Blinken's two-day visit to China culminated in an unscheduled 35-minute encounter with Xi, during which they held a, quote, important conversation, according to the American side. Joe, you spent many years in China. You understand the mainland. You understand what the mainland has done to Hong Kong. I understand all of that behind you. But as you watch this dance between Washington and Beijing, is there promise here? Or are we looking at Beijing that is so reduced by its collapsing economy that it can't negotiate in good faith? How do you read these things, Joe?
Well, I think the problem is that it's not clear that China wants to negotiate in good faith because, I think that the Chinese economy is a very important story to understanding what's going on here, mainly because the economy is running into difficulties, but it's telling that a lot of the problems that the Chinese economy is running into right now are self-inflicted. Some of those in the property market, for example, are a result of genuine reform efforts that could have some potential to be useful. Other problems arise from the fact that President Xi Jinping insists on tightening political control of the economy. And that's really weighing on investment in the all-important tech industries and so on. And I think that it's kind of important to understand that political dimension and the extent to which Xi is willing to sacrifice the economy in part for broader political, ideological, or nationalist objectives, because that has some bearing on these diplomatic relations. I mean, my big impression from this meeting is that Xi Jinping missed enormous opportunities. I mean, there are big opportunities there for them to engage in a certain amount of greater military communication with the U.S. that could ratchet down the temperature in the South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait, that could reduce what are sometimes very dangerous situations with the two militaries operating in relatively close proximity to each other. She wasn't interested in that. And so I think that that has created the situation where the U.S. side, Secretary of State Blinken, went over to China sort of hoping that his presence would be enough, and has discovered that no, Xi Jinping has his own priorities and is not necessarily interested in repairing the relationship in the way that the U.S. had hoped that he might be.
If I understand, then the Chinese leadership is putting ideology far ahead of economics and what we would regard as international trade. That might explain this headline in the Wall Street Journal in these last hours: China cuts borrowing rates again in bid to juice recovery. Subhead, economists say that more drastic measures may be needed, with debt and uncertainty continuing to weigh on consumers' willingness to spend. Joe, does this mean they're doing the same old thing they tried before? More stimulus, more credit issuing to people who are already burdened by their credit? They don't have a new game?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this is that they are starting to nudge themselves toward dusting off the playbook that they followed in the 2008 global financial panic to sort of insulate themselves, except that they aren't really going whole hog on it at this point. So, I mean, back then, you just saw this enormous explosion in credit, in local government credit and financing activities and real estate, anything that they could throw money at to kind of prop up the economy. They've been much more reluctant to do that this time around. I think part of it is because they understand that economic growth does need to be a bit lower in order for it to be sustainable instead of inflating all of these debt bubbles that they would have to worry about later. But another part of it is that for reasons that I think aren't entirely clear, they may be keeping their powder dry in terms of the economic stimulus right now. And so I think that the key point here is that we should prepare for the likelihood that the Chinese economy is going to grow more slowly moving forward than it has done in the past, That will not necessarily be a bad thing, but it also means that, sometimes it's not easy to tell exactly what Beijing's game plan is.
The G7 made a distinction that may be not a difference. The difference between de-risking with China and decoupling with China. It's in China's interest to prevent both, but at this point, do you see Xi's government taking steps to convince companies to invest in China? Do you see Xi's government taking steps to lower the tariffs that have been placed on his appetite for supremacy, especially in high-end manufacturing? Is he doing anything to meet people halfway who are now de-risking and talking about decoupling?
Not really. And that's what's so interesting about this discussion, because we have tended to think that decoupling is a decision that we in the West will have to make as we reorganize our economic relationship with China. And there is an element of that, because certainly companies like Apple and Nike and a range of Western companies from all over Europe and the U.S., both big and small, do have to decide what kind of footprint they want to have in China moving forward. But a certain amount of this U.S.-China economic relationship is also going to be determined by Xi Jinping and China's domestic economic policy. So, I mean, what Xi seems to want is a return to the model where China could just export and export and export to the U.S., and we would absorb all of that, all of those imports, and, you know, meanwhile be sending the money to buy those imports back to China, where some of it could be stashed away in foreign exchange reserves and some of it could be used for domestic investment. And I don't think that's going to really be viable, because what the West is going to insist on, if there's going to be any relationship, is just going to, be more market access to Chinese consumers. And that's going to have to involve opening the Chinese market in a way that it hasn't been before, better intellectual property protection once Western companies are there. You go down the whole list of things that China needs to do to attract that investment. And so if you think of it that way, you begin to suspect that if we do see a certain amount of decoupling or de-risking, whatever you call it, it's not necessarily going to be a deliberate policy on the West's part. It is going to be Western companies individually reacting to the bad incentives that Xi Jinping's own policies create for Western activity in China.
At this point, Joe, is there a way to analyze the relationship between the stumbling Chinese economy, the property market, the consumer hesitation, the enormous debt that they've piled on their municipalities, people not being paid? Does that connect to the American economy, which is still waiting for a recession?
Well, I think that it is inevitable that the two largest economies in the world, the U.S. being number one and China being number two, inevitably are going to have an effect on each other, particularly with the trade and investment relationships the way they currently are. And so that's why this is a particularly worrisome cycle. I mean, back in 2008, when the U.S. was experiencing a credit crunch, China really felt it was in a position and felt that it was in its best interest to avoid a similar dynamic in China. So the Chinese economy always continued expanding pretty impressively, in fact, probably too quickly. Now, there are signs that that is not going to happen this time, which raises the uncomfortable prospect that you could end up with some form of slowdown on both sides of the Pacific at the same time. And I think that that is a less usual development over the past 40 years and something that we would want to keep an eye on.
Do you hear China asking for the U.S. to either increase the investment, come back to expand your businesses here, or lower the tariffs? In this statement by Li, the premier, the external environment is becoming more complex and severe, and the slowdown in global trade and investment will directly affect the recovery process of our country's economy. Is he pointing the finger at us? We're not investing in China, and we're not buying from China. Is that what he's saying, Joe?
Well, I mean, certainly what they would like is an elimination of the tariffs that have been placed on various imports from China, you know, going back to the Trump administration. Politically, I'm not sure if that is a reasonable expectation on their part, you know, given the upcoming election in America. But the investment is much more interesting because the, you know, part of what they are unhappy about is the prospect that the U.S. and European governments might impose export controls or investment controls that would limit the ability of Western companies to export sensitive technology or to invest in the production of sensitive technology in China. And it's really telling that Beijing is unhappy about this of all the restrictions, because one suspects, based on history, that they were hoping to get access to that intellectual property so that they could, how shall we say, borrow it. And it's becoming clear that that's not going to be possible. But I think that one of the problems in these debates is that when China talks about wanting to encourage more foreign investment in China, they want it to be on their terms instead of on proper commercial terms that Western companies would be comfortable with.
Therefore, Joe, and there's no summary with the Chinese economy, it's too non-transparent, but just observing right now, China doesn't have a plan, correct? They're hoping to be bailed out by going back to 2019. Is that the magic formula?
Now, I think that Xi Jinping's plan is that by tightening the state's grip on the economy and then doing some strategic stimulus over the coming months or couple years, they can maintain economic growth, perhaps at a higher quality that will include more benefits for the middle class, which is something that he cares quite a lot about for political reasons, and that also provides the economic base to support the military that they want to develop. Now, that is the plan. Whether or not it is a good plan depends on whether his state-driven model of the economy can really deliver. And I think that listeners can leave it to their own imaginations, an ample economic history to make a guess about whether that's likely to work out in the way that he hopes it will.
All right, we live in a glass house. Let's come home to our central bankers. Since we talked, Joe, the central bankers have voted pause. And the explanation from Mr. Powell last Wednesday, the 13th, was that this pause is not in any fashion a vision of the future, that rates can be raised again and we will respond to the data. And I think there was some mention of a half a point raise possible as early as July. Can you make any sense of that, Joe?
Well, I think that they saw that the rate of inflation has been slowing somewhat, even though it's still roughly double the Federal Reserve's 2% target. And so that would give them some breathing room to hold rates steady a bit and wait to see if there are going to be any more consequences for the financial system of the rate increases that they already have done. But I think the problem is the financial stress can come at any time. And it's not obvious that pausing is going to help them that much, although I do agree it's probably not going to hurt very much over the long term in terms of inflation, given where they are right now.
They're watching the jobs number. They haven't indicated they're watching anything else, the jobs number. As you say, we're a long way from 2%. There's no reason to believe the jobs are going to slow markedly. In fact, they continue to be robust all the time. So what is it that we're watching for, that the Federal Reserve is watching for, to say they're coming to the end of their rate hikes? Is there any particular metric that you watch?
Well, I think what it's probably going to have to be is the inflation rate itself. Now, I mean, they are looking at the labor market as a sort of leading indicator, a premonition of what they think would happen to inflation in the future. Although it is worth pointing out that they have, inflation has slowed off of its highest pace without the kind of slowdown in the labor market that they thought that they were going to have to achieve in order to start bringing down inflation. So clearly their model is not working in the real world, but they seem prepared to stick to that model anyway. So I think we're going to be stuck talking about the labor market for longer than we probably should.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London. He writes the political economics column. There's reason to celebrate London at this moment. Something unusual that was displayed in full color. I watched it as best I could in the background, called Trooping the Colors. And then there's something else to puzzle about. Why grown-up men want to wear funny hats called top hats on a summer's day and attend a horse show of some fashion called the Royal Ascot. When we come back, life in London. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.